Something wrong with the pussy. Something wrong with the pussy. Something wrong with the pussy.
Our voices will ring together until the 12th of never. We will all live forever as one.
Now you must be wondering, Julian, why are you singing Earth, Wind, and Fire? I'm keeping the tempo going, as you can tell. And the answer to that is, I am still heavy in my movie era, and I am singing the song Fantasy by Earth, Wind, and Fire, but the hook is about being together and coming one, which is the theme of Together, the movie I watched this week, which we're going to start with in a second. But first, welcome back to episode 31 of Something Wrong With The Podcast. It's your boy, Julian. Before I go anywhere, call in, because I'd love to have you together with me on this show. See, that was pretty nice how I did that there. Call 877-557-SWWP to get in contact and be together with me on this very show, on this network. Here we are, reporting live from SiriusXM Studios. This film, Together. Now, I'm not... This is slowly becoming a movie film review channel, but I'll leave the in-depth stuff to Letterboxd. I'll keep it light here, and I'll keep it pretty, you know, tight for you, the listener. Together, if you're not familiar, is a story of, it's directed by Michael Shanks. Pretty sure this is his first big directorial debut, not debut, but his first big directorial film. The film stars James Franco, younger brother of, not James Franco. It stars Dave Franco, younger brother of James Franco, the now like sad, disgraced actor, which what the hell ever happened to him after that Me Too stuff. And his wife, Allison Brie. Thankfully, Dave and Allison are the co-stars of this film because the film is very intimate. The premise of the film is they move into this home out of the city and there's something going on in this town that makes them insatiable. They have to be touching each other. They have to be fused together so much so that their skin actually begins to connect and they, like, you know, fuse at some point. I'm not going to here to spoil it for you. Do not feel like you need to skip. Watch the film. It is a good movie. I enjoyed it. There's two points in the film that kind of lost me. One being the ending, which seems to happen a lot in horror films in particular. I think that's quite common in horror genres. Which I'd love to hear from you guys what you think of the ending. And then there's this like weird scene where there's a reveal of this monster. Again, not a spoiler, but the monster reveal is quite odd in terms of the makeup and the execution and its role in the film itself. It would just kind of like suck the life out of the film. I will say it plays more to a horror scary movie than Weapons did. I will say, though, if we're comparing the two, if we're going to put them side by side, it's Weapons, not even close. But Together is a good film. It was a good watch. I enjoyed it. It was good to see Dave and Allison play alongside each other. I mean, there's obviously natural chemistry because they're married in real life, whereas in this movie, they're playing a not-so-committed couple with a lot of troubles, which plays in part to them being so separated in their real relationship, but then there's this supernatural power force out of their control that literally brings them together. So pretty interesting storyline. It's been a good summer of horrors, man. My boy Jordan tweeted that the other day, and I could not agree more. That Good Boy film trailer came out, the one about the dog, and the whole film is from the dog's perspective as this haunting of such goes down in his house. I mean, it's the concept alone is incredible, but super excited for that. I believe that comes in October. There's a few more coming more around the holiday time, the Halloween time that is traditional for horror movies, but it looks really, really good. And when I was watching the movie and I was like, just looking at Offset had a rollout coming up for his self-titled album, Chiari, pardon me, not Chiara, Jesus, don't kill me. Chiari, and I had the thought, passing thought, that directors never have films named after themselves the way in which musicians give themselves that grace. And I guess it's because when you're directing a film, you're creating art on behalf of a script and other people, unless it's like an original script. So like, say, a Wes Anderson or a Tarantino could name a film after themselves if they wanted to. But it's more of a collaborative project, I would say, in terms of recognition on a film, whereas for music, it's not. But then I started thinking about, well, what are some of the rap albums that I like that are self-titled? And I started thinking like Future's. In 2017, we did the double album Future, and then Hendrix. That was a double album. Vince Staples has a self-titled album that's incredible. Playboi Carti. And if we want to even remove ourselves from rap, Beyonce has a self-titled album. And then you want to get into like the white rock era, the Beatles, Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath. And I just started thinking about, in an artist's career, what is a self-titled album supposed to be? I think it's supposed to be an anchoring moment for an artist. I think it's also used as a sign to show maturity and change. Anytime you refer to yourself as your government name, especially in rap, it's a sobering moment in terms of people should expect maturity and growth from you rather than the same old, whatever that may be. Usually it just means, you know, a reflective piece of content. So for Offset, and even if the trailer that he put out with him and his fake therapist, and I truly hope he's not doing this from a performative stance. And this isn't even exclusive to Offset. I'm not shitting on just him. I'm not even shitting on him. I just think hip hop, that community at large, would greatly benefit from therapy and the tools that come along throughout that process. So I hope this isn't, you know, therapy for the sake of an album rollout or for the sake of performance. Offset's been in a lot of public problems with his relationship with Cardi B. We know, you know, obviously they have a child as well. And it's tough to play those things out publicly time and time again. He's been notorious for stepping out against women that he's faithful with. And, you know, how many times can one do that before you look inward and seek professional help? Everybody fucking cheats. That's not the problem. So many guys cheat, but it's different when you're under that microscope and the world expects you to be this person, especially when they put the woman that you've had access to in a life with on a pedestal as if she's like the second coming of, you know, the perfect woman, when in fact it's like, well, you don't know her at all. You just know her of her music and her fame, which in turn makes you think Offset's an idiot for throwing it all away, because you would never do such a thing if you were fucking a woman that almost had $1 billion. But then rather quickly, you learn that's not how the foundations of relationships work. You don't look at a relationship for the financial gain purely. Once you establish the hierarchy and the boundaries respected in the relationship, you look at the person and the soul and the intangibles that make them in your unity together as one. So, yes, in the words of Earth, Wind, and Fire, and just like basic relationship tools, never look at the financial status and well-off situation of your significant other as the reason in which you should stick it out, bro. Another example, I think it was a few weeks ago with Holly Berry on the timeline. Her ex threw some stupid jab at her about how she wouldn't cook or clean, and nor does she have to do that. That's not the role of any woman. But then there was the argument that it's like, well, she's a gazillionaire. Why the fuck was she cooking clean? Well, that's also not true. Like, there are many women that are well off that have, you know, actor money. I listened to a bit of that interview with Taylor Swift on the New Heights podcast with Jason and Travis Kelce. And about 15 minutes of that conversation was her talking about how she loves to make sourdough. And yes, this is a hobby. And yes, this is, you know, whatever. She has access to do whatever she likes. But point is, someone like, it's not a matter of I've wealthed out of an activity. It's you do things because you want to do them. And even the way in which she was talking about making sourdough, she was saying how much joy it brings to give it out to her family and friends and to have Travis join her on that process and make versions of sourdough with her. So if you really listen to what she's saying, it's less about, obviously she could build a damn sourdough factory attached to her garage, but that's beside the point. The point is the amount of love and joy you get from giving those things to the people in which you love. So in this Holly Berry example, if she's not a cook and that's not how she expresses love, then you subsidize that and bring somebody on that can do that. Hey, I'm in a very fortunate position where I can afford a chef. I can have or order our meals from places that we know and love. Then do so. I'm sure she's able and capable of giving love in other ways. And this isn't just a woman thing either, as are men. A lot of men, a lot of gestures for men are kind of formed from what we learn as a kid, or what we see in, or hear in music and through films in Hollywood, like flowers. I buy flowers for myself because I don't have a significant other. But flowers being one of those things where more often than not in our men's personal lives, we don't think about or care to buy flowers ever. But we know in certain situations, especially with a woman in your life, it's a gesture that is often well appreciated because we've been told that it's something that women appreciate. Now, you should know better if you're dating someone, a woman that either does or does not care for flowers, then you should be aware of that and be able to provide or do something for her that would, you know, spark the same level of joy that we've been predispositioned to believe that flowers do for all women. And some of these things don't even need to be things you need to spend money on. It could be very small activities or things that you know that would bring her joy. Point is, everybody's different. Everybody should go to therapy. Directors can start naming movies after themselves. I hope Offset addresses some real shit on this album. Speaking of someone who did address some real shit and knocked it the fuck out the park, Chance the Rapper, welcome back to hip hop, buddy. Woo! Chano from Lil 79th. There is a special spot in my heart for Chance. I was living in Chicago when Coloring Book came out. The city, Chance was the mayor of that city. I mean, his face was on every damn bus stop on the side there, every ad, everybody was wearing the Chicago three, the three hats all around Chicago. It was such a beautiful time in Chicago during that era. And for such a competitive year in music, Chance was, you know, at the top of that span, not only in within the music of that summer, but he was also like skyrocketing as an artist. And at the time, you know, independent artist. So it was really just a great story. He had the Obama co-sign. He came to the White House and performed a bunch. It was just like a loving energy that him and the Social Experiment, his crew of band players in Chicago brought together. Donnie Trumpet, amazing on the horns, but that whole crew is incredible. I will say, a little nervous to listen to this album. I didn't follow much of the rollout. I didn't see many of the interviews beforehand. Like most albums I listened to, I went to the gym in the morning and hit play. Update on my shoulder, still out. I'm doing physical therapy twice a week. I actually have therapy tomorrow morning. But with that means no lifting. So I'm in the treadmill room like all the sexy girls at the gym. I have my treadmill at an incline 9 at 3.2 speed, 3.5 or 3.2, and I'm walking uphill for an hour, really working on my posture because through physical therapy on my shoulder, I've learned that I have, and I've been told before from the old show and even this show, that I slouch like no other. So I'm really working on straightening that back. Ugh. And returning back to full health because I am losing all my muscle and this is very sad for me. So I hit the treadmill, put on Starline, Chance's album, his return since The Worst Day Ever, whatever that last effort was called. I made a tweet about this project, which I can read real quick, and I still stand by it. I said, this might be the best summer for rap since the legendary 2016 run, and Chance sticking the landing on his comeback makes it even sweeter, especially since his last great effort, Coloring Book, released in 2016. I stand by that. I've listened to this album outside of Clips, which I will remind you every week to listen to. Clips is the best album this year. It's not even close. Just keep listening to it. It's impossible not to love. This Chance album is incredible. I'm a nerd at heart. I'm someone that loves to care about history, and I love understanding different people's struggles and vulnerability. That's just who I am naturally, and it's certainly like the more I mature and grow, the more I care about that in others. And just to go off some of these records here, let me just say I got the track list pulled up. First one that comes to mind is The Negro Problem. Pretty straightforward with the title there, and having another Chicago legend on there, BJ the Chicago Kid. It's beautiful. This is like, you know, a clear examination of, you know, generational trauma and the black identity, in black children's relationships with their culture and home. And Chance does such a really good job of dealing with such heavy topics and wrapping it in a way that doesn't feel preachy or like corny. I'm trying to give an example of some artists that, you know, as they got older, like a Talib Kweli lost it after a while. Even Common lost it after a while, where it was like there's some level of elevation to it because the messaging may be strong, but the delivery comes off as like, all right, bro, like no one's trying to hear all that. Like as if it's too corny or too preachy. Chance, and this is due in part to his delivery, his tone, and the production on these records are really, really strong. Chance does a very good job of, you know, basically, I've always thought his music is the closest version of like what Def Jam poetry is, or like spoken word poetry. There just happens to be production over it. I'm sure if you were to print out the lyrics to a lot of these songs, there would be a very, you know, poetic flow to them. And, you know, you could just read them as such without a beat behind it. Letters was incredible. The letters verse by verse, he's examining religion, again, like the Black experience, and even, and he delves even heavier into that. He's like, it's complex subject matter wrapped in, easy to listen to digestible music. And like on letters, he establishes a theme pretty quickly. And then, you know, verse after verse after verse, you kind of understand exactly what's going on here. And the whole album isn't just preachy and jazzy and artsy. There's Drapetomania. I still don't even know how to pronounce this one, featuring Baby Chief Do It. And it's a heavy beat. Like he's rapping his ass off. He's got a lot of silly bars on there, which are really fun. Gun in Your Purse, We Love a Thug Verse. That rhymed. It was great to hear Thug again. You know, I have nothing but good things to say. It's an asshole thing to say because I feel like I have to make a critique on everything. I would just say it's a little too long. We're in the era of smaller projects, so I would always tighten things up if possible. That being said, I don't know what fat I would trim. And secondly, I'm going to tell myself to shut the fuck up because Chance has been gone for like 5 years. Let him put out, you know, whatever. What is this? Only 18 songs? If he wants to put out 18 songs, let him put out 18 songs. Welcome back, Chance, and I actually really want to go to your tour. I'm glad you're going back on the road. I can't even imagine the space that he was in after that last album flopped, where he was on top of the world. The expectation was so high. For those that don't know, that last album led to a huge falling out with his team, his Pat, his original manager. I believe there was actually a lawsuit between the two of them. That's how bad that relationship got. They fully have since removed from each other. Chance seemed to have just kind of looked inward and surrounded himself with, you know, more family. And then obviously there's no secret with his wife and the falling out with that relationship. And obviously Chance has, I believe, a daughter. I don't know if they have one kid or two, but everything, and again, in the spirit of what I said about Offset, life is difficult and it's significantly more difficult when everything that most people go through is done in the eye of the public. So for Chance to handle all things to our knowledge in his private life, you know, smooth those things over, and then to actually take the time, focus, and return on your art and what made us fall in love with you to begin with, it's really cool to have Chance come back and restore that Chicago feeling and restore us, the listeners, trust in his ability to create amazing music. Because I've always been as critical as I can be of Chance. I've always said it's not that it's not there. I just don't think it's returned and he hasn't found that North Star, so to speak. So I do love the opening line on the album. What do you say? The Boy Who Lived. You know, it's a Harry Potter reference. It's the Boy Who Lived, which is just like, what a great way to reintroduce yourself to an audience. Also to a new generation. There's so many kids that do not know, younger kids that have no idea who Chance is, and for this to be their introduction to him, it's just really fun. And I'm extremely happy for him. I'm very, very happy for him. So keep doing your thing, Chance. I'm really excited to see you on tour. I gotta pop out for that one for sure. Kind of jumped right into topics, but I do want to talk about my weekend. I had a fun little weekend with some friends. Saturday night, we had a little outdoor dinner, and at one point, my friends at the table, my friend's girlfriend noticed this couple that were sitting not too far from us. And she goes, oh, that's Gracie Abrams and Paul Mescal. And in my mind, I have fused Paul Mescal and Pedro Pascal as one person. And mind you, I also do not know who Gracie Abrams is or what she looks like. So I'm staring at this table, trying being subtle. I'm not like grilling them, but I'm looking up and I'm like, that's not Pedro Pascal, whatever. Yeah, Pedro Pascal. I kept fusing their names together. I kept saying Pedro Mascal. And then at one point I went to the bathroom and Paul was in line with me. He was behind me, whatever. And I was like, man, you're not, that's not Pedro. So then I went back out, told my friends, like, no, bro, it's Paul Mescal. For those that don't know, Paul Mescal is an actor. He was in Gladiator 2. It was like a huge, his breakout. I mean, it's a huge film, even though it was awful. He's like the guy in that. And Gracie Abrams, who I don't know by face, I know by name because her dad is J.J. Abrams, which is like the, God, what an amazing offshoot of nepotism. J.J. Abrams is, you know, one of the best movie producers and directors in the action sphere, period. I don't even want to limit him to action. I'll just say in general. He's done like Mission Impossible, Star Trek, a couple of those newer Star Wars films as well. I mean, the guy's a beast. It's usually like him and James Gunn that have like pioneered the what new action looks like. And Christopher Nolan, I should say, as well. I should give him credit. But Gracie is... God, that girl is beautiful. And she's in her own right a very successful musician. And I believe she lives here in New York. But yeah, they were just eating nearby. Bit of a name drop there. But that was kind of the energy of the night. It was a beautiful evening in New York. We got a prime table outside, caught the sunset. We love a share plate. All of us were just grazing, mopping. Big mop boys where you take the bread and just mop it up. Had a lot of damn sourdough that night. But the tail end of New York in the summer is my favorite. And this is coming from someone that hasn't left the city at all this summer. I'm one of the few that just I'm a New Yorker through and through. I just park my ass here. This is it. I'll sweat it out in my apartment. I'll sweat it out outside. This is it. You can't, you know, drag me out of here. Wouldn't mind a little vacation, but I'm just not there yet. Got to figure some things out, you know. I do want to, speaking of vacations and locations, there is an update from Instagram called Instagram Map. So let's read about this here, guys. Instagram introduced a feature called Instagram Map that lets users opt in to share their real or recent locations with select friends via inside the DMs. When enabled, the feature updates your location whenever you open or return to the app and displays it to people you choose to share it with. Even if you don't share your own location, the map shows location tagged content such as reels, stories, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, for up to 24 hours. It kind of reminds me of like the original Snapchat map. When if you opened it, you could see where all your homies were. I will say this, fuck you, Instagram. The last thing people want and the last thing that makes people feel safe is tracking data and giving up more location. And which, mind you, this is like, they don't need to put a ribbon on it and be like, you need to know where your friends are. They know, they have all this information regardless. This is like the app's version of like, we'll give you a little taste of what we know about everybody that you talk to or where they're at, get the drop on all your friends. That's really what this is in practice. It's not so much as if they weren't getting all this data anyway. I don't like this, and I wanted to bring this up as a topic because I also wanted to remind people to turn it off. Which you can look up on YouTube or somewhere to find out how to turn this feature off. I would highly, highly suggest that you turn it off because it is invasive and they're already getting all the data they need out of you. So you withholding a little bit doesn't make a difference. While I'm on, this story just came out and I want to read this out loud. A Kentucky woman was arrested after pouring glitter in her ex's car and salt in the engine. A woman in Kentucky was arrested after police say she... Investigators say she allegedly slashed a tire. Oh, she got a tire off, too. Cracked the windshield and mirror and broke the radio screen, leaving the car completely damaged beyond repair with more than $12,000 in damage. She later admitted to some of the acts, saying she was stressed. Wow, Jesus, stress. That'll do it to you. The crazy thing is, like... What did he do? Is that wrong of me to ask? Like, I kind of want to know what he did. And I mean, she's like smiling and looks like alarmingly happy, like a little way too giddy in this photo. And the in the photo. First of all, who in a fit of anger goes out and buys a bunch of glitter? I think that in itself is pretty funny. I understand everybody has salt, especially this salty bitch. But to go out and purchase like a tub of glitter, no one just has that handy unless she's, you know, like a grade school teacher. But damn, love is tough. Tell you who does not belong together, infused as one. As one. This Kentucky woman and her ex. That is an awful, awful thing. Do I want to talk about Trump and Zelensky? They had a tongue-in-cheek moment about the suit looking fabulous. And Zelensky roasted a reporter in the White House pressing room. Well, in the room of their interview, saying, "You wore that same suit last time. At least I changed. Boom, got him." Very funny. I don't want to do too much politics, but I do want to laugh at Gavin Newsom's entire new approach to social media, the current governor of California. His approach to social media has just become Trump. So he's doing everything in all caps and speaking in Trump tone, which is, as a bit, very funny. And it's kind of throwing in the face the absurdity and how stupid Trump's online presence is. And then secondly, today I was on the timeline and there was the photos going around of this was J.D. Vance in high school. And it's him like looking ugly next to two girls that are like fake peeing in a urinal. And then this is Gavin Newsom. He's this like beautiful chiseled chin man with like, you know, a sweater wrapped around his back. And everyone's like, yeah, Gavin is so like manly and sexy and hot. And fucking J.D. Vance is a little soldier bitch. Which is funny. And then everyone's like, yeah, but JD got it out the mud. He went and served in the Marines and then, you know, and then everyone's like, yeah, but like if Gavin's a Nepo baby, then look at Trump. I mean, it's literally the same thing. It's the same playbook. So it's very funny for Newsom to be highly aware of how similar they are and just flip it on its head and just kind of take on that persona and throw it back in their faces, which is interesting. I'm very curious to see how that plays out in the long run. All right, everybody. I think that's all I got in me today. Pause. What's coming up in my life? I've been growing my hair out. That's another thing that's got going on. Not too sure if I should keep the beard going too. Double long. It might be too much hair. It might be too long all around. I feel like it's either got to be one or the other. And right now, I'm feeling like longer hair is more my calling. So please let me know if I should decide to take this down a bit or do something different with the hair. I don't know what the hell I'm doing, guys. I'm figuring it all out day by day. I do have physical therapy tomorrow, which I mentioned. I have therapy Friday morning. I'm just a man of therapy. Any type of therapy, just sign me up, put my name down, I'll pop in, I'll be there. Therapy is going well. I think I've hit a turning point for the better. I was talking to my friends over the weekend at this dinner, saying that when you go into therapy and when you take on something of this nature, coming from someone that, you know, has done a lot of physical activity, whether it be lifting or, you know, any sporting activity in my day, competitively track, there's always a distance or a metric in which you know you're getting better, or like you can see it, it's tangible. You know, when I bench my PR, or, you know, I jump the highest I've ever jumped, you can always tell because it's something that's measured. Well, in therapy, you know, there's no, as I was saying, there's no light switch or aha moment. It's very much a matter of committing, understanding and identifying the change you want to make, and then seeing for yourself time and time again how that decision makes you a better person and a better for those around you or the person you want to spend your life with, whatever the case may be. And the decision that I hope to get from therapy, and I think I'm getting closer to, is identifying what those tools are, what those things are, and then you have to consciously make that decision over and over again, day by day, minute by minute, to then commit to being the person that you want to be. It's not a matter of, even with giving up drugs, which is a daily commitment, but when I first gave up, you know, the blow, the white stuff, it wasn't like a switch went off. I just put my foot down and said, okay, this is it. And then, yes, I am making that daily commitment to never touch it again. But at this point, I'm so far beyond it. It's not difficult to, I don't even think about it in that, you know, regard. There's no like, damn, I miss it moment. But I feel like that has to be the same approach for these other things in my life that I'm trying to address. I have to see the value and understand why this is better for not only me, but for someone else, if it also affects their life, and just commit to being, don't be afraid of the commitment of the thing in which I know will make myself better. It's really easy to fall into bad habits and to slip back into your vices because there you find comfort in those things. And to break those things, you need to challenge yourself. And challenging yourself means coming to terms with your weaknesses and your vulnerabilities, which is difficult no matter what's going on. Even if something, you know, as small as I want to, you know, stop eating so much late night snacks or chocolate or whatever you want to work on. Not everything has to be life or death, or, you know, something to that magnitude. It could be something very small. But it's the failure. It's the fear of failing on that commitment to yourself that I think holds a lot of us back. So don't be afraid to fail. Don't be afraid to commit. And challenge yourself. I guess that's my message for this episode. We're all in this together. Challenge yourself. Stick with it. I love you all. Something wrong with the podcast, episode 31. Deuces, peace. Bye. What was that hand signal? Something wrong with the pussy. Something wrong with the pussy.